Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode during the question and answer session of today's call. If you would like to ask a question, please press star one on your phone, record your name, and your line will be open. I would like to now turn the meeting over to Secretary Marrow. You may begin. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank all of you for joining us today. I believe we have about 350 people on the call, and it's a great opportunity, which I hope we will continue for the next few weeks doing as often as we need to make sure everybody's up to date on exactly what's going on, at least around elections. There's a lot of uncertainty right now and a lot of sort of life and death situations being discussed. But I want to take this moment to remind all of us that what we do with elections is a fundamental promise of our democracy. It is one of the most important jobs, and I'm happy that the presidential preference primary was delayed until June 2nd. I'm sure you all know that now. We have been sending out notices. But that doesn't mean that our responsibility and job doesn't it goes on, and it will continue, and we have to make sure that we are prepared for any eventuality for the June 2nd primary and beyond that, because it really doesn't look like at this point there's an end date that we can all talk about to any of this emergency. So that being said, I am sure we can get through this together. I'm happy to say that we have been working together with both the Registrar's Organization and with the Clerk's Organization. These associations are, we've had a long-term relationship, and we will continue trying to work through whatever problems come up, whatever issues people are having. So today, what we're going to do, following our first meeting where we had the same kind of discussion and a number of questions were raised, which we tried to answer at the time, but as you know, this is a fast-moving target, so we will continue. We received some additional questions that wanted answers from the Registrar's Association, from ROVAC. So today, after this initial overview that I'm going to give you of what's going on, I'm going to then turn it over to Ted Bromley, who will address those questions that we received, and then we'll open it up for any question anyone wants to ask. And rather than try to get them all answered today on the phone, because we only have 1 hour on this line, we will basically write down all the questions. If there are some that can quickly be answered, we'll do that. Otherwise, what we'll do is get back to you in probably in an email, you know, within a few days or whatever it takes. There are some questions we won't have the answer to at this point, especially if they, as it relates to what's going to happen after June 2nd. And I know that's on a lot of people's minds, but at this point, I would not expect there to be much more action from the governor's office in terms of the two other things we asked for besides delaying the June 2nd primary. The two other things were absolving us of having to do any kind of absentee balloting in nursing homes, because it directly conflicts with the governor's request that people, the public, not go into the nursing homes. So Ted will address that one in a little while here when we talk about the other questions. And the other one we asked him for was to close the public schools on primary day. That really has become less an issue at the moment, because we have a lot more time to prepare now. So that was the real reason that we delayed a primary. It was not a decision lightly taken, frankly. There are a lot of considerations when you start talking about moving any election date. And the only reason that we ended up recommending it was because of our additional time needed to prepare for whatever eventuality occurs. So I think we have to all continue to do that, continue to prepare for June 2nd under current conditions. And that means we still have to address things like how we get more poll workers, try to anticipate what it's going to look like June 2nd. Could be there are more people ill by then that would want to have absentee ballots and actually require to have absentee ballots. there could be fewer. We could be through this. And so within that uncertainty, and it's a big uncertainty, we have to plan. So as of this date, the only governor's executive order has been the June 2nd delay. There is a lot of discussion nationally. I know that some of you have been watching the national press, and you can see there are a lot of calls for additional vote by mail in states. We can't and won't address that today because we have to do a lot of thinking about that. As you know, that would directly conflict with the law as currently in Connecticut. So we're going to start thinking about it. I think we need to, but for now, I think we just need to get through the June primary and then see how we get through if this is still going in for the August primary and beyond. And the general election, of course, is also looming. So today we'll talk about things like the calendar. Ted's going to give you the current adjusted calendar based on a June 2nd presidential primary and, like I say, answer the other questions that have come forward. And we are prepared to continue working with both ROVAC and the Clerks Association to get through this the best way we can and make sure that we fulfill our jobs. Because our responsibility collectively, and mostly you are on the front lines there locally, because many of these problems are going to have to be solved at the local level. We will certainly give as much advice as we can and assistance where needed. So with that, I want to turn it over to Sue Larson. She and Anna Posniak, the two leaders of your organizations, are both on the line today and have stepped up to work with us on answering some of these questions. So, Sue, I'll ask you to say hello.
Hello to everyone. We have all breathed a big sigh of relief when we heard the announcement to postpone the primary. However, June 2nd will be upon us quicker than we realize. I'd like all of us to think outside the box to come up with ideas we can implement over the next couple of weeks. Talk to your county chairs or myself. Let us know about your suggestions. Remember, as ROVs, registrar voters, we are the doers. We implement plans no matter how tough the situation. I hope we all stay healthy. We need all of you. So stay safe and healthy. Thank you.
And now, Anna, are you there on the line?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you. On behalf of the CTCA, I would like to thank Secretary Merrill for her support last week with postponing the presidential preference primary until June 2nd. We are aware the current health crisis may possibly still be a concern for voters in early June. We hope that this delay will allow us time to assess what changes we must make to ensure for a safe and successful primary election process. We are the ground-level administrators of the election process, and as such, we intimately understand how to successfully administer a secure election. The challenge ahead for us is to allow for equal access to the polls while prioritizing the health and safety of the public and election workers alike. Collaboration among all the stakeholders is what we need now. Collaborated efforts of many can accomplish more than the efforts of a few separately. Communication and training is a key to acquiring consensus of opinion among the members of the CTCA. We most respectfully ask that the clerks and registrars are given the ability to actively participate in the upcoming decision process. Undoubtedly, this is a stressful time for us all, but we will get through this together. Thank you for coordinating today's conference call and an effort to allow for open dialogue. Thank you, and stay healthy.
And thank you both for being part of this. And yes, we commit to working together to through these upcoming discussions. You're right; there's going to be a lot of them. And so I thank you for all the work we're going to do together. Meanwhile, before I turn this over to Ted, two quick updates, and he can fill more in if there are questions later about it. First of all, the primary ballot itself. And this will, he'll tell you about the exact calendar dates that have been moved. But as of today, I'm sure some of you are wondering, are we still going to have a primary? at this point, I can tell you that the Republican primary, we still have to hear from Rocky De La Fuente. He is still technically in the race and has contacted our office to make sure that he's still under consideration. I don't know if that will change between now and I think it's May 2nd when we now have to do a ballot decision about who's actually on the ballot. But we're looking at that right now, and I think that will be to some extent within our discretion, depending on what kind of publicity there is nationally about him. As for the Democrats, we are still waiting for a letter from Elizabeth Warren's campaign, which I believe will be forthcoming. And of course, Bernie Sanders is still in the race. So until we hear from either of those, and you will be the first to know if anything changes on that front. So at this point, I think we still have to prepare in case there is certainly a Democratic primary and a lesser possibility of a Republican primary. That's one update. The other update I wanted to give you was on the party process. There have been a lot of questions from both parties about how to conduct their various party functions like town committee elections, delegate selection, conventions, and the like. They have come to an agreement and filed a letter with our office agreeing that they would be able to do telephonic and other means of conducting those elections because they can't come together to do it. That's all under party rules, but the one thing they needed from us was to be sort of a repository of a letter of agreement between the two parties, that they would both abide by that agreement, that would be okay to have an off-site election. It's up to them as to exactly how they conduct that, and that might be different in different towns. I'm going to assume that also goes for state conventions for things like state reps and state senators. It'll be a little trickier, I think, across town boundaries, for example, for the state senate races that cover more than one town. But again, I think the parties are the ones working on that. They do have an agreement from us that it would be within state statute to be able to conduct those elections from a distance, that is, either telephonically or potentially through proxies or other electronic means. So those are the two updates that I wanted to give about what's happened so far. Like I say, I don't expect much other activity from the governor's office in terms of overriding any other election calendar issues or even the nursing home situation, because they are simply not the front burner now that we have put the election off until June 2nd. And they are dealing with very, very weighty matters right at this moment in terms of health care and other issues. So that's it from me. Now I'll turn it over to Ted Bromley to give a more thorough update and talk about the election calendar and answers to some of the questions that have come up. So, Ted, take it away.
Thank you, Secretary Merrill. So, hello, everybody. Anna and Sue, thanks for your remarks. So I'm actually sitting in my dining room at this point, so all of us have slightly difficult situations, I know that. And so the first thing is I want to thank everybody for their patience and for their understanding and for their help. I know that both Sue and Anna had pushed out some emails for me when we were trying to do a bunch of stuff on the fly. I know in one of the emails you guys caught a mistake that I made in terms of a date, so I appreciate that as well. You know, when things change on a daily basis, we do our best. So what are we doing? So the first thing is let's just briefly go over some of the issues related to the move of the primary. So as the Secretary said, and I'm sure you all know, the primary has been moved to June 2nd, 2020. So what does that mean? So as we had said to you in an email recently, any outstanding absentee ballot requests that you have, particularly the military absentee ballots, all those should still be honored. A few of you have given me emails about, well, you know, if I know this person's a college student and they gave me an absentee ballot request a couple of weeks ago, and I know they're not in college, should I reach out to them? You certainly can do that, absolutely. But any of those absentee ballots that you have on file, and particularly the military, where you know that they're still valid, then they should be honored throughout this time period. The second thing that we received phone calls about was the change in political parties. So basically, the governor's order to move the primary to June 2nd, what it did is it pushed out any future dates. But the one date that sort of lags along with everybody is the three-month waiting period. So the three-month waiting period for a June 2nd primary would be March 2nd. So, of course, that's already gone by. But a very good question from, I think it was one of the registrars, is, well, what about those individuals that were stuck in a three-month waiting period back when the primary was in April? Well, of course, those three-month waiting periods will run, and when you print your list out for June 2nd, those individuals will appear as eligible, and that's the way they should appear. So the good news is that the voter reg system, centralized voter reg system, will accommodate those three-month waiting periods for you, and as long as you're entering the cards, or as long as those individuals are in their three-month waiting period and it has expired, then that should not be a problem. And the third question that was a big question from the registrars is, what should we do about the canvas? And as I had sent out the email before, so you should go ahead and finish your canvas up now. I know that's easier said than done, since particularly we're probably all sitting at home, but basically you don't have to delay any longer. You can actually drop that stuff in the mail because of the fact that the primary is in June now. So what do we have in terms of a calendar left? So I did send out an updated calendar, but let's just go over a couple of the highlights. So as the secretary said, we do have a little extended period for which candidates to withdraw. So that actually could work out to our benefit. So April 27th is the deadline for candidates to withdraw. So that means that we have a little over a month left for individuals to withdraw. And if they do, as the secretary said, you'll be the first ones to know. And we'll see if at that point we can cancel one or both of those primaries. If that doesn't happen, April 28th is the date that the secretary will determine the order on the ballot, with, of course, uncommitted going last. Those of you that have been registrars and town clerks before understand that the ballot will be the candidates' names and then uncommitted, meaning that a voter could vote for an uncommitted delegate, meaning that they don't like either candidate, but they want to vote for, you know, a delegate to be sent. The next big deadline or the next availability would be May 12th. That's when regular absentee ballots would become available for the June 2nd primary. The voter registration deadline. So, again, just like any other primary, 5 business days before, which would be the Thursday before June 2nd, which would be May 28th. That's the postmark. And then June 1st is the in-person enrollment. So those are the sort of new dates for your primary coming up, if indeed, again, as the secretary said, if indeed we have one. And I think the secretary is right. I think that at this point we have to just move along and start planning as if we're going to have one. And then if we don't, then we'll be ahead of the game for August and November. Okay, a couple of other things that I wanted to update is I got a few questions here that I just wanted to cover, and just bear with me here because I'm trying to work on computer and other things as we move along. So the first one was from a couple of the registrar's questions regarding the upcoming primary. The first one was poll worker training, and I think, you know, the secretary and the deputy and the executive staff, we all talked this morning in advance of this call, and I think a great suggestion was that particularly for this event, for the June event, for your poll worker training, if your poll workers are able to take the online poll worker training course, we will deem that to have been trained. So that should be easier for you. In terms of your poll worker training, they could all take it remotely. It's online. They can take it from their houses, and as long as they have taken it, we'll deem them to be trained. The other question that we received was with regard to moderators, and whether or not a moderator could remain eligible or certified. And so with that, there already exists in the statute the ability for you to actually train your moderator in an emergency situation for a specific event, and we would certainly call this an emergency situation. So you certainly can train them locally for a specific event, and we would honor that as well. The next question that I received that I wanted to get out there, as the secretary said, we're working on the supervised absentee balloting, and we're also working on the regular absentee balloting to see where we need to go from there. And as the secretary promised, we will certainly involve you in that. Okay. So then there was one other question that I wanted to get out there. And again, just bear with me as I'm scrolling through my emails here. There was one other question that was very good that I wanted to get out there. Okay. Which was the fact of, just bear with me 1 second. Oh, I already covered it. It was the 3 month waiting period, so I apologize for that. All right. So that's sort of the brief overview. I think it would be probably good at this point so that we open it up for questions so that we can get as many of your questions either written down for a response, or if we can answer them, we will certainly try to do that on the call.
Okay, thank you.
Why don't we go ahead and open it up for questions?
Once again, to submit a question, please press star 1 on your phone, record your name, and your line will be open. Our first question comes from Giselle. Your line is now open.
Afternoon, everyone. A couple of things. The training for the poll workers, can we do it either, if I'm correct in saying you said clarity training via home will be sufficient, but can we also do via conference as we're doing right now with our poll workers? That's the first question. The second question would be, can coordinators of the actual nursing home, if we're not able to get in at all, because May 12th probably is not a possibility, can coordinators actually do the supervised balloting themselves and be placed in the mail? And number three, if candidates choose to have unofficial checkers, can we decline at this time due to the limit of folks that can be in the polling area? That's all.
Okay, great. So I can answer those very quickly. So the poll worker training clarity is fine. If you also want to do a conference call with your poll workers, that's fine as well. The second, the supervised absentee balloting, again, we're working on all of that process to the point of whether or not we'll even require supervised balloting or whether it'll just be a regular absentee balloting process for those individuals. So, again, more details to come on that. And the third question, what was the third question again?
I'm sorry, your line has disconnected.
Oh, okay. Does anybody remember that was on there? Denise, anybody, what was the third question?
I only heard two questions, actually.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll take the next one then, I guess.
Our next caller is David Smith. David, your line is now open.
Good afternoon, everyone. Appreciate the call today. My question has to do with the ultimate primary, if in fact it's going to be in real life, in person, distancing ourselves, and the CDC and everybody suggests that we'll probably be involved in this through July, August, perhaps, which means that everybody will still stand a chance of being in a dangerous position coming in and voting, and, of course, our poll workers will as well. Thoughts on how to deal with that and whether the legislature can do an emergency change to the ballot to enable people to send them in as opposed to showing up in person.
So again, I think what we need to do is let's take one issue at a time, and so we're going to remain focused on whether or not we're going to have a June 2nd, and how we get through it.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not we get to August, and whether or not the situation is worse or better, I think we'll have a better handle on that as we move forward. Certainly, talking with our health professionals, but. I don't think we should lose focus on June at this point. So,
the problem being,
but I do remember the third question, which was the unofficial checkers. Remember, as registrars, you have the ability to appoint unofficial checkers. So it's your choice. Unofficial checkers are whether the registrar appoints is your choice according to statute.
Am I still on with you?
Yes.
Yeah. The question regarding the legislature and the balloting and so forth, the legislature, of course, will be gone by July and by August, so they won't be in a position to do any kind of a change in the mail-in ability of a ballot. What has to be done is, as the Secretary certainly knows well, has to be done now while they are still in action and can move to have an emergency way to deal with that.
This is Denise, and let me just chime in here and say a lot of that is speculative.
Yep.
It's more likely that the legislature will not be in session now, but will come into some sort of emergency session as needed. But as you know, many of these rules about absentee ballots are in our state constitution. So that makes it even more difficult to figure out how we would possibly do a vote-by-mail situation even in an expanded way. But I do think we all have to figure that there may be more people sick who will be requesting absentee ballots. So I am committing to everyone right now that I will be working with both ROVAC and the Town Clerks Association to come up with some ideas on how to manage additional absentee ballots coming in, which we suspect might happen, whatever the law says. So if we work together, maybe we can come up with some ideas that we can do within our current structure that will make things easier. Because the real problem is it's very difficult to manage a bigger volume of absentee ballots without some changes in the process itself. So that's kind of where we're going eventually. But today we're just assuming there will be more absentee ballots, but we're still going to have to man our polling places and keep everything the way it is currently. And so we have to make sure we can do that, and we have to do it well.
And the logistics of doing that is very, very difficult indeed. Again, in as much as we can't get any of the materials we need, like Purells and the wipes and all that sort of thing. Thank you.
We do have 2 months to work on this. So I think the June 2nd is definitely a reprieve on that entire situation. So we'll see where we are maybe a month from now. Things will be different. Things seem to be different day by day. So I think anything else we figure is just speculation at this point.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Okay, we have Giselle back on the line.
Hi. Okay, so the third question was in regards to unofficial checkers. Seeing how we're limited to the amount of staff we can actually have in a polling place, and we're going over the 10 noted amount of folks, do we have to obligate that statute of having unofficial checkers?
Right. So I did remember your question, and I did answer it. So the unofficial checkers, the choice as to whether or not to appoint them, even if they're requested, lies with the registrars.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Our next question comes from Karen Lyons. Lyons, your line is now open.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Registrars, I know we will do a job, but I asked Denise Merrill and Ted Bromley if they would please, please notify our mayors and first selectmen how difficult this job is being for our town clerks and our registrar of voters. In Norwalk, we have been denied and not included in department head meetings regarding the virus and what other departments are doing, stating in an email that we are not employees, we're only paid by the city. We really need the support of our departments and our municipalities. And if you could send a letter to those in powers to be, it would be helpful.
Thank you, Karen. I actually have already sent such a letter. That's about all I can do for now. But I hear you, and this reminds me to tell you all, and this regards David Smith's last comment as well, that, you know, you are the ones that are going to be responsible for this at the local level. We can give you advice. We can try to be supportive, and I have tried to be. But like I say, we're in this together, but you guys are the ones that are going to have to make this work because every town's a little bit different. So you have a particular situation in Norwalk that someone else may not have. So, like I say, I did send a letter to both the superintendents and the first selectmen to make sure that they were supporting the election officials in their towns. I don't know what more I can do, but I'll try.
Yeah, it's just unfortunate that our superintendent of schools has already stated that we can certainly have the schools, whether they're open or closed, and the registrars, we all will do our job to make sure that we have hold up the integrity of the election. But it's the town officials that if they don't support our endeavors, we're going to fail. And, you know, you can say that we're important, but they don't feel that way. So it's important that you stress it is all I can say. And I think that comes from all of the registrars in the state of Connecticut.
Okay.
Our next question comes from Dan Haley.
Thanks, Karen.
Dan Haley, your line is now open.
Good afternoon, everyone. I have a continuing issue with staffing the polling places. Right now, I have people who I normally use are saying because of the virus situation, they will not be able to help out at this upcoming primary. Given the fact that a majority, I would say, of the registrar voters are over 60, you're asking us to put our safety on the line for an election that, at least from the Republican side of point of view, rather, it looks like it's a foregone conclusion, and it's pretty indicative that it's going to be the same on the Democratic side. So, what are you going to do to ensure that our workers are safe and that our registrars are safe?
So it's a great question, Dan. So again, as the secretary said, a lot of these issues that you're asking of us in terms of how are we going to ensure that your local people are safe, you know, a lot of that has to come from you. We can do a lot. We can offer money. We can do some other things, some creative things. But in the end, when it comes to hiring poll workers, when it comes to polling place setup, all of those issues are going to fall on you. And so, you know, you already have tools. You, as far as in terms of, you know, can you hire younger poll workers? You know, in terms of the presidential preference primary statute already allows you, as I've said numerous times already, to reduce your polling place officials to, I think it's four as opposed to the normal complementary of poll workers that you're going to need. And then from the state end, you know, as the secretary has already said again numerous times, you know, we are working to see whether or not we can alter any absentee balloting, whether or not we can alter the way that supervised balloting is run. So there are things that we can do, but when it comes down to it, in terms of the manner in which the elections are set up, that is all in Title IX, and there is nothing that really can replace polling place officials and local election officials in terms of running it out from the ground. It's just the way it is set up. And whether or not we have a June primary, as the secretary said again in the beginning of this phone call, we are working on that issue to see if those candidates that are still in are going to actively drop out. So we are working on the things that we can do at the state end, but there are things that we are going to have to rely on you as local election officials to do on your end as well.
Understanding that, I can't restrict the number of people that will be in a line. So if I have 50 people that show up at 6 o'clock to vote at any single polling place, I don't know how I'm going to stop those people from being within two feet of each other, 2 inches of each other, for that matter, if I only have a staff of 4 people.
Okay. I guess, well, that's a topic that we'll have to work on. I don't have any more advice for you.
Okay.
So we can go to the next question.
Our next question comes from Lisa Cox. Your line is now open.
Okay. Hi. I'm a relatively new registrar. We, unlike some of you, we are still at our office working together. And I wanted to know what the policy is on changing our hours to minimize our own risk. We haven't had people coming into town hall, but we are still here and, again, working together. Can we change our hours right now during this virus?
Right. So that's a great question. So yes, the statute does allow you to alter your office hours as long as you post them. So that's all the statute requires of you in terms of your office hours. So if you want to alter your office hours so that you can work less or separately or whatever it is, as long as you post those, your availability to the public, then that's all you need to do.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Next question.
Our next question comes from Pauline Newman. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon. Hope all is well. My question is three of us who are two registrars and a deputy are due to be recertified for our moderator training. Is there any way that we could get that extended so that we do not get into a system that, you know, there's going to be quite a few people training for these?
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. So what I would recommend there is again, there is a statute that that simply says that you can certify your moderators for a particular upcoming event if there are no moderator training classes available. So we certainly understand that there aren't. So as long as those moderators go through the moderator's handbook and you sort of have a discussion with them about the upcoming election, then they would be certified for that particular event.
Okay, because we have two new moderators. And like I said, the three of us, my deputy and myself and my other registrar, need to be certified.
Right. So in terms of the new moderators, they may need some guidance even if they were to have taken the full class. So, you know, they probably want to certainly review the moderator handbook and the setup guides, and then I would say take the poll worker training modules too that we have available online. All of that can be done remotely. And then certainly if they have questions, they can certainly follow up with you as veteran moderators.
Yes, that's what I figured I could do, but I wasn't sure I wanted clarified. Okay, so we'll be okay for us to just to stand by and just help.
Right. Yep.
Thank you very much, Ted, and I hope everyone stays safe.
Oh, thank you. You too.
Thank you.
Next question.
Next question comes from Mark Bernacki. Your line is now open.
Great. Thank you, Ted and Secretary Merrill, for the opportunity to have open dialogue with you folks. My question is regarding the transfer of what I'll call liquids with the existing absentee ballots that we have. Being a former printer, I know that there are self-adhesive envelopes that can be used for people to seal envelopes versus having to lick them shut. Currently, they have to lick the inner envelope and the sequentially numbered envelopes. We haven't received our kits yet. Is it possible that you can put a reorder in to get self-sealing envelopes?
That is probably unlikely at this point to do that. The printers are having trouble just getting us the supplies as it is in terms of making our tight deadlines. Certainly for your office personnel, I would just say, you know, you can get those ballot moisteners, little bottles with the sponge on them. And certainly if if an inner envelope comes in and it's not sealed but everything else is done because somebody doesn't want to lick it, I would go ahead and accept it anyways.
Okay. Yeah, we'll definitely accept it. And, if everyone's going to get pushed through to our offices, we're going to have a heck of a lot of health issues with handling these envelopes. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Our next question comes from Chanel. Your line is now open.
Hello. How are you guys? I had a couple questions. I know we talked about it in the last conference call, but I kind of wanted to clear it up because there were different stories about it. So you said if the congressional was in one district only, so for us, we only have one congressional person, and we have 40 polling places, and I know the statute reads that wherever you hold your primary, you have to hold it for the general. But even though in August, the primary will go to the 40 polling places, but because we're trying to decrease people, et cetera, and the spacing and everything, is it possible to just break it down for this time, since it's an emergency, to our original 33 polling sites instead of the 40 polling sites? And then my next question was, we have a similar issue to the supervised balloting. One of our polling places is located at an elderly facility, and the management has closed it down to us. So I wasn't sure how we should go about it. We thought about meeting with the management and giving them applications, go door to door to see if they can do the applications. We'll come back and collect it, give it to the town clerk's office. Town clerk sends it out. And either the registrar or police, we can come and pick up the ballots, or if they should mail it back in. I'm not sure how we can do this because this is an actual polling place for the building itself. And we have about, I think, between 300 and 800 when you include in Republicans and Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And
so,
then for the guidance before me about the absentees, we usually use glue sticks. So if you want to encourage people to use glue sticks to seal their ABs, that'd be great. That's it.
Okay. So in terms of the polling places, so at this point, again, and it becomes probably increasingly unlikely that we will have numerous special acts or numerous executive orders from the governor regarding all the details of an election. The statute is that you need to use the same polling places you would for a primary as you would for the election. So that's just the statute on that. In terms of that one particular polling place that you have that might be closed, then obviously it sounds like you're already working with the management and to see if maybe there's another location in that area that you'd be able to use. I don't know, but that's something to look into.
If not for the seniors, unless they can get a MyRide, which I'm not sure. I think they just recently opened it up to the public for the housing portion, so I'm not sure how that will work because that's one of our wards that's split into three different places. So it's very difficult and we kind of really don't have any other options.
Yeah, that's something I don't know that we're going to be able to fix on this conference call, Chanel, so why don't you just follow up with Shirley, who I know is your contact in our office. So appreciate
okay.
that. Thank you. What's the next question?
Next question comes from Sheila Shiglack. Your line is now open.
Question has been answered. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Next question comes from Barbara Jean Denera. Your line is now open.
My question has been answered, too. Thank you.
Next question is from Jim Bellet. Your line is now open.
Jim, well, maybe that's me. Yeah, this is Tim Beeble from Bethel. And Nancy and I have been talking about supervised balloting, and we thought that one way to approach it is that we only have to conduct supervised balloting if the nursing home facility actually requests it. So if there's a nursing home that doesn't want us to come into their facility, they could basically tell us in writing that they are specifically asking that we do not do supervised balloting at their facility.
Well, again, I don't think we should go down the supervised balloting rabbit hole yet. We're going to have more detailed information for you on that, depending upon whether or not the governor's office gets involved or whether or not our office does. So why don't we hold that topic off, and we will definitely get you detailed information on that, I promise.
Okay.
Our next question comes from Doug Laurie. Your line is now open.
Ted, Denise, in these threads, we haven't yet touched on physical paper used for petitioning. The major parties have the potential for primary challengers in the summer, and the minor parties are already in petition season. I don't need an answer now, but what's our advice to these folks?
So right now, in terms of petitions, there has been no change in the process at all.
I understand that, but what are we doing with paper that moves between people, and how are you dealing with paper that arrives at your site or the registrar's?
Yeah, so what our staff is doing is we're using gloves.
Thank you, Ted.
Next question.
Next question comes from Carol Hurley. Your line is now open.
Hi, Carol Hurley from Weathersfield. Some of my questions have been answered over the course of this conversation. I did have a suggestion for if there are petitions incoming, you could actually make a copy of them and use the copy to just review until you finalize the original if you're worried about, you know, paper being passed along from person to person. And my other thing was, someone had said that their government wasn't cooperating, and I want to say ours is actually the opposite. We've been included in all the conversations. We've been treated as department heads, and they confer with us on everything. So our experience is completely different. And this is a very fluid situation, and I think people really need to just take a deep breath and not get ahead of themselves, because literally things are changing hourly. So I just wish people would bear that in mind, because a lot can happen between now and June 2nd, and I don't see the point in worrying. I think there's a lot of valid points and a lot of valid questions, but some of them are so far out that we just don't know. I mean, every hour there's something new on the news. So I just wanted to put that out there and just give kudos to Weathersfield Town Hall for including us. That's it. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Carol. I mean, I think, and the secretary, if you're still here, you might want to chime in on that. I mean, I greatly appreciate that comment, because I think you're right on target. I mean, we here at the state are doing the best that we can. The secretary is working you know, very hard on a daily basis on all of these things related to election, and some of it just are things that we haven't been able to, or is just in the sense of an emergency, is not relevant yet to be able to address. And so, you know, that's why we have these conference calls, to get you the most updated information that we have on a topic. And, you know, we write down your comments, and some of the things are, you know, are great suggestions. Other things are maybe things that we haven't thought about yet, and you know, still others are things that maybe, you know, 5-6 weeks down the road in some emergency like this, that's an eternity. So,
yes, and thank you, Carol. I think this is the time to say that we only have 10 minutes left on this call, and, you know, that it's very helpful. If we all have these great suggestions, we'd be willing to entertain a lot of them for the future, because we're really looking a lot of this now with this emergency situation and beyond. So I would suggest you submit any good ideas or questions or problems that you're thinking of, like might be solutions for the future, to your respective associations, and we're going to have ongoing meetings about this. And so, you know, I am hearing lots of good ideas from people and some problems we hadn't thought of. So I would suggest that for this call, and let's, for the remaining of the call, just like have burning questions that need to be answered, and we can either very quickly answer them so that we make sure we get everybody in on this call, and then after that, you know, we'll go from there and we'll try to answer them in writing. Please, if you are communicating with us, use email. There is no one in the office at this point except sometimes Ted, and not very often. So we're trying to do all this from a remote area, which is great, working wonderfully, but email is the best way to communicate with us from now on. Okay, Ted, let's
see
if we can get
some calls. Okay, let's see if we can burn through some more, Secretary. Okay, next question?
Yep.
Next question is from Dottie Dory. Your line is now open.
Okay, thank you. I would like to echo Karen Lyons and the others about the difficulty of running the polling place as usual, but especially under these difficult situations. My concern is the participation or supervision by the health department with polling places, because as you recall, the Ohio election was canceled because the health department deemed the polling places not fit for people to attend. So I would like to see the health department on these conference calls. And also, we have been told that we are responsible for keeping the polling place sanitized during the 16 hours of the election. So, and also the gentleman who mentioned spacing people apart with six feet is difficult if you only have six people working. Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks. Okay, next question.
This question comes from Linda Grace. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon, folks. I have two questions. One is this, that line of social distancing. In Bridgeport, we have four double precincts, you know, two polling locations within one building. Two are large enough, we could probably separate them. The other two are very small facilities, and that would have us at four times, two times, you know, at times 16 people before we let a voter in. It's a concern. I don't know the answer. I don't know if you do, but I throw it out for thought. The other one is, I anticipate, particularly in a large city, extreme increase in curbside voting requests. How do we control that with four people, minimum, if we have four people per person, and deal with abuse? You know, people that really just didn't get up that morning not feeling well, but don't want to enter
right
into a polling place.
Right. So the first question, very quickly, Linda, is that, again, in our primary, pre-primary mailings to you, it'll be more detailed, but there are numerous positions that you can combine, particularly double polling places.
Right.
So in reality, it probably won't be even close to 16. It'll probably be closer to like 7 or 8.
Okay.
And then the other thing is, in terms of the curbside, I think that's something that we can work with our messaging, with your messaging, in terms of the proper use of the curbside, because you're absolutely right. Trying to manage that sort of as like a Dunkin' Donuts would be virtually impossible.
Exactly.
Okay, next question.
This question comes from Deb Danette. Your line is now open.
Thank you. My question's all answered. Thanks.
Great. Next question.
This question is from Karen Lyons. Your line is now open.
Hi, Ted, Denise. This is just a message to the registrars. Moderator training will still go on. None of my classes are over the limit of people. I only have one in April. I'm sorry, in March that will go on, and a couple in April. But anyone who needs help with moderator training, I'll be happy to send my materials. I'm sure Darlene, Tim, and all the other trainers would do the same and walk them through anything that they may need prior to the primary. They can reach me by my home email or office. Thank you.
Great, thanks. Next question.
Our question comes from Sue Danette. I'm sorry if I messed up your last name. Your line is open.
Hi. Yeah, this is Sue DeVocatis from Pomfret. Mike, I don't know the regulations for the absentee voting. I have heard in other states that there is a note either on the absentee directions or maybe inserted that says, please don't lick the envelope. Is that something that we can do?
Yeah, that, you know, that's a great idea. I'm going to write that down.
Okay, thanks.
Yep, sure.
Our next question comes from Caitlin Riley. Your line is now open.
Ted, thanks. A quick question about the posted office hours. Will statute allow the office hours to be by appointment only, as our town hall is currently closed?
You know, I think at this point, I think it would be reasonable if you posted something and said, you know, if it's an emergency or you need a registrar, you know, give a call, and, you know, then if you can make an arrangement to drop whatever it is off they need or whatever, I think that would be reasonable at this point.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah.
Our next question comes from Deborah Donenbaum. Your line is now open.
Hello, this is Deborah. I want to say kudos to Milford, too, for working with the leaders. All of our leaders have been wonderful to us. My question, Secretary of the State, is it possible, because we don't know how this is going to go and if the virus would still be rampant in all the...
Deb, you're breaking up. I didn't get it.
Could we have poll worker training at our setups when we do our polls, at each individual poll, polling
place? Uh-huh. Oh, can you? I mean, yeah, you can, but I think it would be a lot easier for you to just have them take the online training.
Yes, but if they're not able
then,
to do
then they're
that,
working remotely from their house and you don't have any contact.
Right, but if they're not able, right, if they're not able to do that, would that be allowable at the last minute, because that's who will show up and hopefully they're not sick before the Monday or the Tuesday?
Yeah, I mean, if they're not technologically savvy or if they don't have a home computer or something, then yeah, you can have small groups, sure.
All right, thank you so much.
Next question comes from Ann Grenadier. Your line is now open.
Hello, I have two questions. One regarding the Canvas. We've already printed our letters, and they're all dated April 29th. Is there any reason why we can't wait till April 29th to send them out?
No, you can certainly, yeah, you can wait if you want, but you can do them now, too.
Okay. And the other one is June 2nd coincides closely with our town's budget referendum. Is there any reason why we can't have them both together?
You know, that's a great question. Thanks for asking that. I've gotten that quite a bit. There's nothing that says that you can't, but there are statutes that, one, say you can't put a question on a primary ballot, which means that you have to have a separate ballot for that. Two, you're going to have a separate location for your R's and your D's because they are participating in a primary. You're going to have a separate location for your unaffiliateds and your property owners if you allow non-resident property owners to vote, and a separate list for them. So there's nothing that says that it's illegal, but there are some hurdles that you have to cross, which are you can't put the question on the ballot, you have to have numerous separate locations because you can't intermingle the unaffiliateds with the Republicans and the registrars, and then you can't intermingle the non-resident property owners, who by definition are not voters in your town, with the registered voters.
So by separate location, you mean a totally different place or a separate line in the same polling place?
No, totally separate place.
Totally separate place. Okay,
I mean,
thank you.
You know, you can be a separate room in the building as long as it's outside 75 feet and all that kind of stuff.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Yep.
Okay, I think we can probably take one more question.
Okay, our last question comes from Betsy. Your line is now open.
Thank you. My question really is more of a for everyone to remember, according to Ted, that all absentee ballot requests are early federal FPCAs and any of the existing early ballots. We should honor them for the June 2nd,
yes.
And we can notify them
yes.
if we need to. And then any of the regular ballots, if we know that they are students that will be that are probably back, we should contact them to find out if they can vote in person or if they want them mailed to a different place.
Yes.
Okay, I hope everybody got that. Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much. I'm afraid we have to end here. But I encourage all of you to email your questions, send a copy to ROVAC or Town Clerks Association. No question is too small or too silly. We will do our best to get you as much information as we have or are able to put together. So thank you all. Stay safe. Stay home. And we'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. This concludes our conference. Thank you for your participation. You may all disconnect now. Speakers, remain on the line.